Live from Trumbull Street in downtown Hartford, this is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. It's our monthly broadcast from our iConnect storefront right here in downtown Hartford, underneath the marquee of the Excel Center at Hartford 21. Later today at 1 p.m., the Colin McEnroe Show will be right back here in this space, and I hope you can join us. Now, that's not the only exciting thing that's happening in the city today. Later, there's evening holiday shopping and pop-up iConnect storefronts, much like this one, including this one. It's called Small Business Night Out. Features over 15 vendors, including Hartford Prints and Hartford Denim, the folks who we share this space with. We're also going to be starting a conversation on today's program that will be continued this Saturday, December 14th at 1 p.m. at Real Artways. It's also sponsored by Hartford Public Library, called How Do Our Surroundings Shape Us? And that's going to be the start of our conversation here. Once again, if you want to join us downtown, 231 Trumbull Street in Hartford. I want to welcome in a few panelists who are going to be part of this conversation that's happening with the Hartford Public Library and Real Artways right now. Toni Gold is president of Urban Edge Associates. She's joined us on the program before to talk about the sense of place and about some urban areas, including Hartford, the city that she loves so much and has cared for so much for so many years. Toni, it's good to see you again. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Delighted, John.
Jamil Ragland is here. He's a resident of Hartford, a Trinity College alum who works for Trinity College now, and he's going to be part of this panel discussion that's happening at Real Artways this Saturday as well. Jamil, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Lourdes Correa-Carlo is an artist who's exhibiting at Real Artways, and her work, Systemic Relation, has really helped us kick off this conversation, and we will start with you. But Lourdes, welcome to our show, first of all. I appreciate
it. Thank you, John.
Maybe you can explain exactly what systemic relation is. Describe it for our audience, and we can talk a bit about it.
Well, systemic relation is consists in two pieces that I developed while I was living in Hartford in 2009, and it's a house that is located in Babcock Street versus a architectural structure that I found in the 91 highway going to Springfield, especially to the, I was driving to the airport one day and I saw that architectural building. No, it's not a building, it's a construction. And it struck me because of the location and also the psychological connotation that it had at that moment, and I decided to work with those two pieces.
And in a moment, maybe we'll talk about this house on Babcock Street and what this says to you and what it means to you. I know Toni Gold and I were at Real Artways yesterday together, and we were walking through your exhibit and looking and talking. And Toni, I know you know an awful lot about this one structure that Lourdes is talking about. Many of our listeners might not know what we're saying right now, but as you start to picture in your mind what Hartford and driving by on the highway looks like, you probably will picture it. It's this highway overpass, essentially a pedestrian walkway that looks almost like nothing else, this bizarre concrete and steel structure. Explain exactly what this is, Toni.
Well, this was built in the 60s in conjunction with the construction of I-91. It's actually, the structure itself is actually a set of steps and ramps taking the pedestrian or the wheelchair or the bicycle, for that matter, up high enough to the overpass to get over I-91 to the riverfront. And it looks like a giant penitentiary with an arm that goes across the highway. It's all cyclone fence and concrete, and it's pretty ugly. But it was, at the time, it was an early example of mitigation, which is what the DOT is required to do. To mitigate any damage that highway construction might have done. And so it, since 91 cut off the access to the river, this was built to mitigate that effect, to allow people to go up and over. Very few people use it, but it's very visible and it's very ugly, although in a way it's a very arresting structure, and I think that's what Lourdes picked up on when she decided to make the sculpture of it.
And before we talk a little bit more about the way this sculptural piece looks in its place, this idea of mitigation is so interesting because in recent years, when developers or governments are faced with an issue of how to deal with the fact that we've cut off the river, there are perhaps more elegant ways of doing things, including the Riverfront Recapture Project, which many people know in downtown Hartford, which does get people from the city to the river. It's a much more thoughtful construction. This idea of mitigation, it almost seems, Tony, as though they did it out of spite. It looks like someone being forced to do something that they didn't want to do, taking people from an empty parking lot that they don't want to be in to a park that very few visit.
Well, that's certainly true. I don't think it was deliberately vindictive, but it was certainly out of ignorance of how to do it. And it was an example of the NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, which in the pressure of environmentalists in the face of really destructive highway building all over the country had just been passed. And the DOT didn't know how to do mitigation. They figured if they just created a de facto pedestrian connection, that would do it. Things have improved over the years. 20 years later, when the whole riverfront structures were built, those are also mitigation, because the plan in 1980 was to actually widen and heighten I-91 between downtown and the river.
Make it even bigger and even higher?
Bigger and higher. And there was enormous resistance to this idea at a time when the DOT ruled the world, and corporate CEOs and congresspeople from Connecticut went all the way to Washington, and the U.S. DOT was persuaded to threaten the Connecticut DOT with taking away all of its funds unless it retained the connection to downtown. And at that time then, they had already designed an enormous set of ramps and so forth, and they ended up redesigning the whole thing. This is almost unheard of. Lowering 91 to grade so that it could be bridged, and taking the Founders Bridge completely out of the interstate highway system. So now they would never have done these things on their own, obviously, but because both the public and the DOT by then knew how to do this stuff better, we got a much more graceful connection.
We're talking about sense of place on the program today, a number of different conversations, one having to do with the iConnect storefront that we're sitting in right now in downtown Hartford, but also an exhibit that's happening at Real Artways right now. It's the subject of a conversation this Saturday put on by Real Artways in the Hartford Public Library. This exhibit, Systemic Relation, is by the artist Lourdes Coria-Carlo, who's with us. You've been hearing from Tony Gold, the president of Urban Edge Associates. Lourdes, tell us a bit more about what struck you about this particular, and as we say, ugly structure that goes over I-91. Tony described it as a bit like a prison. Did you feel that a bit as you looked at it?
For me, it was more trying to understand when I was located in that moment. It was my first time in Hartford after graduating from my master's. And it was trying to understand the city, why I was here, where I was located, and understand my surroundings.
What does it tell you about your surroundings? Now that you know the place a little bit better, what story does it tell to you?
Well, it was a little bit arresting, and also the other house that I photographed that is in this exhibition, it was a very personal house. It's besides my mother's house in Hartford, and I feel a personal connection to that piece because it's in Babcock Street, and I was trying to see how I am located in that environment. And then looking at Hartford as the history of the Puerto Rican community, and how the surroundings affect that community, because we feel dislocated in a way from Puerto Rico, for example. And we've been here for a long time, but I was unaware of that history at the same time. I was coming from Puerto Rico to grad school, and then for the first time in Hartford. And I was trying to understand all this relationship that I had with this landscape, and that's why I reacted visually and practically very intuitively to this place in Hartford.
Well, tell me more about this dislocation. I mean, when we've spoken with people, and we've spoken on our program a number of times about the strong connection between Puerto Rico and the Hartford area, when you talk about the dislocation, is there something specific about the way we have created space here that adds to that dislocation or maybe makes you feel a little bit more at home? Can you describe that a little bit more? Because this is a very different place than Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. But I guess I'm wondering if you can talk about how the way we've arranged Hartford might make you feel, I don't know, even more disconnected from the place you're from.
I think it's, first of all, it's the language, and also is the temperature is very different.
Especially also. Today.
And even though that Connecticut is very small, when I came the first time in here, it felt very big for me. And I felt a little bit threatened because of the open landscape. Puerto Rico is very compressed, it's very small, it's very tight, and it's very chaotic. And there's a sense of openness in here. Now I feel like at home. This is my second home. This is the first place that I came when I shifted to United States. So I feel that Connecticut is my home now. So I see it in a very different way than before. But I felt dislocated because I learned English when I came in here. I didn't know any English. It was like trying to understand all these different things. And I felt dislocated. And how I translate that sense of dislocation into my work to share it with other people and start a conversation about that.
Now, Jamil, you're part of this panel as well. And I guess I'm wondering if you can give me your thoughts about this idea of race, ethnicity, urban space, some of the things that that she's talking about in this exhibition. What does all this say to you?
I think that the way that we've used space in Hartford has really been done in a way that has divided people along racial and ethnic lines and along cultural lines as well. Last night I was at the public meeting for the development of Downtown North and Downtown West, and I couldn't stay for the entire meeting, but I did stay for as much of it as I could. And I was listening to them talk about development and walkability, and those are terms that come up a lot, and those are specific space terms and terms in, of how we want to reorganize space, how we want to reorganize how people move around the city. And the term in particular, walkability, really speaks to me because that's such a gentrified term. And we're talking about the overpass on 91, and I can remember going by that basically my entire life as a kid, like, does anyone actually use this? And I don't think anyone actually does. And this is kind of one of those early things of walkability that we have an idea about people walking certain places, but who are we actually talking about and where are they actually walking? And so when I hear terms like walkability in terms of space development, I think, are they talking to me? Because I walked here this morning from my house and it was fine. And I live about a mile away and it was fine. So when we talk about walkability, we're obviously talking about, you know, connecting some of these parking lots that people have mentioned before, you know, these ideas like the pop-up shops and those types of things, which are all very good ideas. But do we also have kind of an implicit and sometimes explicit racial and cultural meaning behind the term walkability? Who do we want walking around the city, and who are we actually targeting these ideas towards? Are we targeting them towards the residents that live here now, or are we trying to bring in a gentrified crowd from the suburbs that will walk around and see certain things that they can also see in the suburbs anyways?
Well, maybe some things they can't see in the suburbs, but walk around and then, you know, leave, or walk around and maybe, you know, have a nice apartment in downtown. I'm really interested in exploring this idea of walkability a bit more with you, because maybe you can tell me more about what you mean by it being a gentrified term. One of the things I think I'm hearing, Jamil, is, look, when we talk about urban planning and urban design and walkability, we're often saying we want to get people out on the streets, people walking around shopping at storefronts. But there are an awful lot of communities, not just in Hartford, but in many other urban areas, where people are saying, boy, I don't want to walk. I wish I had better bus service. I wish I could actually get where I need to go a little bit better, as opposed to making a place that I could walk.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, that was why I walked here this morning, because it actually made more sense to walk from my house than to risk catching a bus that didn't come on the time it was supposed to. And those types, I suppose when I say walkability as a gentrified term, because walkability becomes posited as a way to attract people, as a way to provide a service to people who already exist in the city, that walkability is a term to convince people from the outside to come and stay a little bit longer, spend a little bit more money, as opposed to say, well, we have a population that doesn't drive, that, you know, that is required to drive, even though Hartford has a very high rate of poverty, and the types of costs you incur with having to have a vehicle to get basically anywhere in the city is a real concern for a lot of people, myself included. So when you talk, when we're talking about walkability of that nature, I sometimes think, are we really talking about, as you mentioned, better bus service? Are we really talking about putting in stores and shops that will actually not just connect downtown north to Albany Avenue and the north end in a way that makes it more friendly to outsiders, but that will actually address the needs of residents that actually do live around that area, so that we're not just talking about drawing people out from downtown Hartford towards the north end, but also drawing people from the north end towards downtown Hartford and bridging that gap in both directions, opposed to, as it sometimes is characterized, bridging it in one direction, pushing people out towards the rest of the city, but also bringing people from the rest of the city into downtown Hartford.
Yeah, and I can imagine, once again, this pedestrian bridge that that we have photos of, and the, all the different bridges that we probably need to build around the city as we, as you know, maybe metaphorical bridges. Tony, I'd just like your thoughts on this really quickly, because you've been a part of so many plans. You've seen them come and go, plans for downtown, plans for the north end, plans for the south end. Maybe you could just address some of what Jamil's talking about.
I think if he's right that the term walkability has been, quote, gentrified, but that's because this whole notion of place has kind of been appropriated also. And I think that placemaking, properly defined, really means that the community grabs hold of its place and analyzes it and defines it and ends up creating it, whichever community that is, whether it's well-to-do people downtown or poor people in the North End. It's your own place right around where you live and work. For me, because I live in the West End of Hartford, it's Farmington Avenue and the neighborhoods near it. For my friend Jennifer Cassidy, who lives in Asylum Hill, it's the piece of Farmington Avenue that's in Asylum Hill. And it, the same is true in the North End. For whatever area you live in, maybe it's just your immediate residential neighbors, more likely it includes a commercial street that is or could be the town center. And how that place is defined and treated and designed and programmed and managed is really what placemaking is about.
We'll be exploring this idea of placemaking a bit more in our conversation today. We're broadcasting from a pop-up storefront, a pop-up radio storefront. It's part of iConnect in downtown Hartford. If you want to join us, it's at 231 Trumbull Street, right underneath the marquee of the Excel Center. Tony Gold is here, president of Urban Edge Associates. Jamil Raglan is here from Trinity College. Lourdes Correa Carlo is an artist whose exhibition at Real Artways called Systemic Relation is what's got us talking today. We're starting a conversation that they're going to continue at Real Artways on Saturday, and we'll have more information later on in the program and also on our website, WNPR.org. When we come back, we'll be talking with Margaret Bodell, CVO of Create Here Now. You can join us downtown Hartford on Trumbull Street on Where We Live. Live from Trumbull Street in downtown Hartford, this is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. It's our monthly broadcast from the iConnect storefront right here on Trumbull Street, 231, as a matter of fact, underneath the marquee of the Excel Center. Later on today, the Colin McEnroe Show will be here to have a little Christmas conversation. Hope you can join us for that. It's just one of many things happening in the city today. Small Business Night Out features 15 vendors, including Hartford Prints and Hartford Denim. We'll be talking a bit more about that. We're also previewing a conversation that's happening on Saturday at Real Artways called How Do Our Surroundings Shape Us? That's our conversation today as we join Tony Gold, Jamil Ragland, Lourdes Correa Carlo, and our next guest, Margaret Bodell, who's CVO of Create Here Now. It's a statewide space reuse program, mentoring community leadership and space reactivation around the state. We've spoken with Margaret before around this sort of project in downtown New Haven, and we're so glad to have you back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So maybe you can just explain a little bit of what Create Here Now is before we dig into this.
Sure. Create Here Now was really built upon some other initiatives we did. One was called City Canvas. Along with Rod Franz, we activated municipalities and artists to work with leaders to present public art. Hartford was one of those with the Charter Oak Project. And so after City Canvases, we wrote a grant, and we said, how can we help people continue working together with their municipalities and taking hold of their environments? So lo and behold, we got the grant to work with these municipalities to carry on the work of the Office of the Arts and DECD with Kip Bergstrom. We are 6 months into the program. We're taking over buildings. We're starting businesses. We can't wait to come here to Pratt Street and work with Christina Newman Scott on an initiative called State of Makers. We just worked with the city of Waterbury, activating and showing off their assets. When we talk create here now, it's creating with what we have in the here, in the now. We don't need to go somewhere else. We have everything we need to make places here in Connecticut. And this is also about networking all of our artists, all our creatives, and all the people to get involved and take a stake in where they live and make it the place they want to live.
So when you say that we have all the places that we need right now, you're starting businesses, you're reactivating spaces, what does all this take? I mean, maybe describe one project straight through so people understand what it is you're talking about.
Sure. Here's an example. The Office of Historic Preservation at the State of Connecticut worked with us to be able to give a grant to take over an old historic building in downtown Bridgeport called McCleavy Hall. We asked artists to help us activate it. We opened the space. We're going to use the space to further showcase all kinds of entrepreneurial businesses and other artists coming and cross-pollinating with our artists here in Connecticut. So we launched that, and 160 artists came and supported us. Some of them had never been to Bridgeport before. So it's really about moving around within the state and opening up new economic drivers for our creatives so they stay here in Connecticut.
Making sure that these projects are able to be sustainable is, I think, one of the key things. When we talked to you about the New Haven project a few years back, that was in a space that we've now been a number of times. It became the Grove for a time being, and now that space is empty again, but maybe soon to be something else. Talk about sustainability with projects like this so that you don't have this great idea that is ephemeral, that comes and goes, and then, you know, a year later, somebody might want to come into a city and they say, oh, that thing isn't there anymore. How do you keep that from happening?
It's hand-on mentoring with new leaders. When we go in and we start a project, we make sure that we're tagging someone that would really like to dig in and stay with us. It's every single day checking in and trying to strengthen the network so that they have support. When people don't have support and they're trying to do something fantastic, it's often too overwhelming. So we're creating a network of support.
When you're talking about State of Makers, explain a little bit more about what this project is all about.
Our Connecticut artisans really need support to help their businesses and also do better business. So we've networked. Now we did a show with 50 artisans at the City of Waterbury. It was called State of Makers. It's the launch. Will grow and move around the state and gather more artisans. And we're going to do some workshops here in Hartford about how to do better business in the time of this economic downturn. And next year around the holidays, you'll see a larger State of Makers show with hopefully over 100 or 200 artisans that join up with us. It's about supporting them.
So we'll find out a little bit more about some of these projects moving forward. What I'd like to do, though, is maybe have you comment a little bit. You were listening into the first bit of our conversation, and I guess I'm wondering if you have any thoughts from what you heard and the conversation that's going to be happening at Real Artways this weekend about sense of place and maybe about some of what our other panelists have said about gentrification or about walkability for cities. What does all this mean to you, Margaret?
It was really interesting to hear from the other folks and talking with Tony and about the planning of places and how highways divided downtowns and what can we do to mend this? Certainly public art projects and, you know, who are we fixing up our cities for? Well, hopefully people will like what we're doing in these cities and move there and be part of it. And I think there's an awful lot of local people that really want to see the place they live be the place they want to live forever and be able to brag about it and say, please come visit me.
So, Jamila, how do we do that better? Because I think that, you know, we on our show all the time, we have conversations like this, big ideas that are going to hopefully fix a problem or going to energize a city. And we talk with both community people and we talk with people who come from the outside with ideas. But from where you sit, from your standpoint, what is it that a city like Hartford needs to do to I suppose, recreate itself in the way that would help you and your community to just thrive more?
I think that you can sometimes get lost in the nuts of, and bolts of commercial development and things like walkability. And sometimes you can get so focused on doing the things that you need to do as a city that you sometimes forget about the things that you want to do. And I think that projects like this, that projects like the pop-ups and projects like the exhibit at Real Artways, that these sorts of things also are just as important in making Hartford attractive to everyone. I don't think that art has a specific constituency or a specific group that it appeals to. I think that everybody wants to be a part of art, and everybody wants to have a stake in art as well. And I think that these are types of things that Hartford does need more of. More creativity, more support for the types of projects you're going to see tonight, the types of projects that you have going on in the long term, the types of exhibits you see at Real Artways this weekend, that the real key is to continue to support the arts because they're so important, and it's so important to give people something more to come into Hartford for than just to buy something, but to experience something, to share something with someone else. And part of the key is to make that known for everyone, to get out into the north and the south and the west and everywhere, you know, Blue Hills Avenue, and say, we have these amazing things going down in downtown Hartford. Come down and look at them and talk to someone you might not otherwise talk to otherwise. Share space with people that you might not otherwise encounter unless you were in this same area experiencing this artwork, experiencing this pop-up shop, experiencing this exhibit. And that when you bring people together through the lens of art, that you give them something to talk about, something to, once again, to use a metaphor again, to bridge the gaps between the various neighborhoods of the city, between the various cultures and races of the city. So I think that these types of things that we're discussing today is exactly what we should be focusing on, as well as the commercial aspect, as well as the walkability, as well as all those things that actually go into an actual functioning city, but also making the city something more than just streets and services, but also making it into a cultural place for people to share and experience things.
Lourdes, I'm wondering if you can pick up on that and maybe talk a bit from your experience now as someone who lives in this area and someone who knows Hartford well. I mean, what do you think that a city like Hartford needs to do to address some of the issues that we've discussed today?
I don't know, to be really honest. It's so complex. There's so many issues. I don't think it's only in Hartford. It's a global problem today. So I think that, yes, culture is interesting, that it bridges people. And we share experiences, and it's free. Art is free in that sense.
Well, one thing I guess I'll address to you is, you were talking about the divisions of the city, whether by roads or bridges, trains, over the years. And it's very clear, you see it all the time. In Hartford, there are neighborhoods that have been divided. And predominantly, some neighborhoods are African-American and West Indian, and some tend to be mostly Puerto Rican. In your experience, Lourdes, I mean, is this part of what has defined the city of Hartford, that there are these enclaves in which people tend to live with people like themselves and tend not to mix with others?
Well, I've been in Connecticut for a while, and I lived in Houston also for 2 years. I went to an artist residency. I live in Puerto Rico all my life, and I think this happens in many places. And going to Houston, there was a separation between certain class communities versus the others. And for example, I didn't have a car in Houston, which was very difficult. I was in the lowest rate. Because if you don't have a car, you are practically not existent.
Yeah, if you think you need a car here in Connecticut, you really need a car in Houston, yeah.
You really need a car in Houston. And so in here, I worked to make this work. And yes, I worked in the Puerto Rican community to understand it because I was never here before. And in here, you need a car to access, for example, West Hartford. So there's a huge difference between being in the center of Hartford in here, for example, in the Puerto Rican community, versus like West Hartford. I drive and I see the difference in terms of race, class, and all those complexities there. But I don't have the the answer for that. I just can't pull things in my work and share it with people and then start a conversation about what's the problem, why these things are happening here besides the Puerto Rican community, why these psychological connotations in these structures were happening here, for example. That's what I brought in my work. And just to share it, to share that experience with everyone. But I don't have answers. I don't think that in that sense, art is more open. It brings the conversation. It brings the sharing of experiences. But then there's other people that come in and bring other point of views or other answers to this.
Tony, do you think it's the physical way we've aligned ourselves that has caused some of the issues, the social issues that we see in Hartford today?
Well, I think the physical way we've aligned ourselves is more of a effect than a cause. I think the answer, if there is one, is to build great places. And what that requires is both a cultural and a social aspect and a physical aspect. I think we forget, we don't know, many people don't even know, because they weren't born yet, how much the city's been taken over by the automobile, for example. Remember, this is the next oldest city in New England after Boston. It was founded in 1635. There were no cars. And all of the downtown streets are basically wagon tracks and cow tracks. Even to this day, that's the oldest remaining imprint of the earliest days of Hartford. The architecture is mostly 19th century, and some of it is quite wonderful, although we've lost an enormous amount. But the thing that really says it all, and this is an interesting statistic, when Hartford was at its peak population in 1950, it had 170,000 people. Since then, we have lost 50,000 population. We have gained 50,000 parking spaces. And all of those parking lots all over downtown used to have, in many cases, fine, grand, historic buildings on them. The streets were narrower, the sidewalks were wider. If you look at historic photographs of downtown Hartford, they're packed. Trolley cars, horse-drawn vehicles, a few early automobiles, and pedestrians everywhere, because the car didn't own the city. And what happened starting in the 1950s was that the car began to take over cities. And so places which potentially could be wonderful background spaces for artists, for culture, for coming together, for meeting, for social, it's been made too hard to do that because of the amount of traffic and the width of the streets. And we sort of figured that out by now. But changing it, undoing it, is just an enormous task.
Jamil?
Just to jump on to that, part of another issue has been also the commercialization of the private space, of the public space that we do have left. And one of the things you see in Hartford is a real lack of even benches, like a place to sit down when you're walking. If you look over at right in front of Capital Community College, that restaurant right next to Capital Community College, they put up both planters, those giant concrete planters, and they put up like a fence around a little outdoor area. And I understand that for legal purposes, when you have an outdoor area, it has to be fenced off because of alcohol, for alcohol reasons. But now you've created a situation where in front of Capital Community College, where people walk past to get into, that it's nearly impossible to get past that area when several people are trying to get through at the same time. And you look around the city, you look around West Hartford, you look around East Hartford, you look around general places in Greater Hartford, that a lot of the smaller public space that we do have is being commercialized in this sort of way, is being, the public amenities are being reduced. You look at bus stops, that there are far less bus shelters now than there were in the 90s, and that bus shelters aren't being repaired in the same way they were. So as Tony said, we've lost so much of the city to the automobile, and even the spaces that we have now, we're continuing to lose to different policy and decisions that are decisions that are being made as well. And
I was just going to say, what's so interesting about that space, you mentioned First Capital Community College. I mean, this was the hub of commercialism in Hartford. This was the G. Fox building. And this is where people did gather and people all came. And now essentially what we have is a school inside an old department store, and a whole bunch of people standing around out front waiting for buses, not able to sit down. It's a very, very different place. It's really interesting you brought that up because, again, that was a commercial space, but it was also a great public space, Jamil.
Yes, I totally agree, and I think that Capital Community College is a wonderful institution, and it's a great it's a great anchor for that part of the city as well. But it needs to be supported with the types of wide open sidewalks, with the types of I don't want to say concessions, but acknowledgement of pedestrians and acknowledgement of people who need to get around the city besides using an automobile.
Margaret, maybe you can talk a bit more about that, because as you try to reactivate these spaces, I mean, it requires so much. It requires entrepreneurship, people willing to take chances in storefronts. It requires, of course, civic involvement, but civic involvement takes a lot of different forms, everything from signage to clean streets to streets that work very well to maybe places that don't have so many parking spaces so that people will try some other form of transportation. Talk about that civic aspect of it and creating a space within which to flourish.
One of the problems is we do a lot of events all the time when we're reactivating a space, and the question you'll get from the public is, where do we park? What does it cost? So working together with the city, the BID or the DSSD, we try and figure out how to make it easy for people to congregate and work with all of us and artists to come from all over. So how can you make it easy? I think that that's been one of the main things, is just trying to figure out working together, and it's really coming around. And when, after a while, when we're working in a city, you know, as in Bridgeport, DSSD has taken over where we are leaving off, and we're moving on to other municipalities, and they are really taking the charge and trying to help people, make it easy to come downtown, have it clean, have it well lit. And the stigma changes. There's a lot of stigma in Connecticut about these cities being dangerous, and they're not. And if everybody would just come downtown and check it out, your perceptions can change really quickly.
We're talking with Margaret Bodell. She's talking about Create Here Now, a statewide space reuse program. Tony Gold is here from Urban Edge Associates. Jamil Ragland, who's from Trinity College. Lourdes Correa Carlo is an artist who's exhibiting at Real Artways. Her exhibit, Systemic Relation, is on right now, and it's helped us kick off this conversation about the place where we live. We are downtown in Hartford on Trumbull Street in our pop-up iConnect storefront space. If you want to join us, it's right underneath the marquee of the XL Center at Hartford 21. Colin McInerney will be broadcasting from here at 1 o'clock today. When we come back, more conversation where we live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on tomorrow's show, since the Newtown shootings last December 14th, America has had a long and very heated conversation about guns and violence. But lost in the aftermath of this and the other mass shootings are a couple of realities. The gun debate we just had really has little to do with the reality of gun violence in America. Handguns are used in suicide and family violence far more than mass murders. And in urban areas, there's a daily drumbeat of gun-related crime that never grabs the headlines. Join us for a conversation that uses some hard numbers and personal stories to talk about guns in America. That's tomorrow's conversation. I also hope you can join us on Saturday morning for a special broadcast on the anniversary of the Newtown shootings. Colin McInerney and myself will be hosting a three-hour call-in program. We'll give you a chance to call in and share some of your thoughts. We'll be hearing news throughout the course of the morning as well, and the statewide ringing of the bells at 9:30. At 1 o'clock, we have a very special program. Matter of fact, at noon, right, Tucker? At noon, we have a program with Ray Hardman that's presenting some of the music in memoriam of the Newtown shooting. So I hope you can join us on Saturday. Today, we are downtown in Hartford at 231 Trumbull Street. It's our iConnect storefront space. It's part of a project to reactivate some downtown spots. We've been doing this off and on throughout the course of the last few months. This space is going to be very active tonight for Hartford Denim, which we've had on the program before. I want to welcome in Christina Newman Scott from the City of Hartford, who helps to put together this iConnect program. And Christina, welcome back to our show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, John. Great to be here.
So maybe you can tell us about this project that is happening later on today. All of these spaces are going to be activated. A little shopping in downtown Hartford. What's happening?
It's going to be great. I mean, it's cold. Ideally, I'd want some, 80 degrees outside, but that's not happening.
In Jamaica. It's 80 degrees, but not around here, right?
Exactly. Yes. Well, we've partnered with AJ and his Small Business Night Out, which has been fantastic. Many of the businesses that are coming downtown are from the neighborhoods, which is wonderful. And essentially, our iConnect space, we're going to be on Pratt, the old Lux Bond space. Hartford Denim will be at 231 Trumbull. And we'll have, in all, probably about 18 vendors or so. So it's going to be, we're really excited about it. Hartford Prince, the first store that we opened as part of our iConnect initiative, will be open tonight, as well as many other shops in downtown are having programs. So Stackpole Moore is having a program. So it's inspired other types of activity, which we're really happy about.
And there's a lot of things happening. There's an ice skating rink down at the park. And
yeah.
There's all sorts of things happening downtown.
We've had over 10,000 people already come out to skate. So we're really excited about that. The rink brings in over 100,000 people and is a real benefit to the businesses that surround the, you know, in the downtown that surround the rink. So we're happy about that. You know, iConnect at its core wants to kind of empower the talent and the community that exists. I mean, we believe that there has to already be a sense of place, right? Or else we're just going to have the bridge to nowhere. And we don't want that. So it's really not about this kind of manufactured experience. It's about using it as a platform to showcase the wonderful activity that already exists in this place.
Well, I hand the microphone over. Tom Deller's here from the city as well. And Tom, good to see you once again. Well, what are your thoughts as we have this conversation about placemaking and reactivating cities, this downtown area in Hartford, which has in some ways been maligned over the years, trying to restart itself. What are some of your thoughts here?
I have lots of thoughts. I think that...
I'll bet you do.
It's intriguing that I look at Hartford and I see unbelievable potential, and I'm stunned by what I view as the negative attitude by people about the city. There are fantastic people living in the city. There's great opportunities in the city. And I think that the automobile has done a huge disservice to this community. In addition, Tony mentioned all the great buildings we had and used to have. And I think that much of the architecture that was built in the 70s and 80s turned its back to the people and made it more difficult for people to enjoy the city. So we need to spend lots of time to try to figure out how to reverse some of these negative trends and figure out how we can take these things that divide us into different parts of a city and figure out how to join ourselves back together so that all people can enjoy what we have. Cities in many ways have helped spread the culture and idea and creativity. And I think that the automobile has caused us to lose some of that because people can't get together and share. And we need to figure out how to bring people back together and share and bring that creativity back to the city.
But it is such a hard thing to do because we've been built like this for years and years and years. And people, because of the way we've been built, need their cars, in many cases, to get around. Tony references the fact that we used to have a lot more people, but now we have a lot more parking spaces, these huge tracts of surface parking lots. We have to start getting at that, Tom. If you want to change the car culture, make it so people don't want to drive in so much.
Well, I think that we are working at that. And I mean, the intermodal triangle, we're trying hard to figure out how to make bus service work better. We're trying hard to think about how we can get people back on the sidewalks. You know, we have lost a lot of population in the city, but if you look at the jobs that we have in the city in the daytime, our population is above that 1950 population. We need to figure out how we get people out of those buildings, out of their cars, and walk the city streets. We're going to have a certain amount of people come in vehicles. We need to recognize that and understand that. We also need to try to think about how we change movement in the future, how we can get people out of their cars, come in on the buses or other things to enjoy the city. Hartford, unfortunately, needs the economic dollars of suburbia to survive. We need people to spend their money here, to support the businesses here, to support the creative culture here. So we need to get those people in here, but we need to figure out how they do not damage our city. And I got to say that every discussion that I ever have, whether it's about an arts venue or housing, always degenerates to parking. And it's the issue we're always going to have to deal with. We're always going to have to think about. But we need to think beyond parking and think about how we create this exciting, vibrant place.
So we just got a tweet from Rachel, and I think you addressed this a little bit, but I think she may be commenting on something that that Jamil was bringing up before. Her question is pretty simple: who are you trying to attract with iConnect?
We're trying to grow the local businesses, the creative culture, and we're trying to let the people of this city and this state understand who's here and understand the creativity of this city and the people of this city, and that's what we're trying to do through iConnect.
So, Jamil, and I think I was thinking about this in terms of something that you said earlier, this idea that we are a city that's not just a downtown area with some vacant storefronts we want to reactivate. We're not just creative people. We're people all over a city, many of whom are just looking for a place to live, work, eat, shop themselves. Do you feel like projects like this are helping to address overall the needs of the residents of the city of Hartford?
I think that they address some needs of the residents, but not necessarily all of them. And one thing that did come up in the meeting last night was housing in downtown Hartford. And I that was actually a section I had to leave, and I really didn't want to, but that was exactly my bus game, so I had to go. But one thing I would like to hear in this conversation as well, particularly in meetings like last night, is things about affordable housing, perhaps in downtown Hartford, because you look at the layout of affordable housing in Hartford, and it's, you know, grouped in the north end, grouped in the south end, grouped in certain neighborhoods, and bringing some of the creativity together means the mixing of different socioeconomic groups, different racial groups. And we know very well that socioeconomics and race are explicitly tied together. When you bring these groups, when you bring people of lesser means together, people of better means, that also means bringing together different racial groups. That also means to bring together different cultures and different ideas and type of creativity that we want to build in the city requires that sort of mixing, so that we're not just talking about we're talking about things like iConnect, that, you know, sometimes maybe I want to get a t-shirt printed, you know, do I have access to that sort of space? And it was actually really unfortunate. There was a boutique soap shop on Pratt Street that was open here a few years ago. It was called House of Essence, I believe. And I did buy soap there once, and I really wanted that place to succeed because it's the type of thing that you want to see in Hartford, the types of boutique shops that, yes, do appeal to a certain demographic, but also says to people that there's more to Hartford than just what you think there is. But at the same time that we have that sort of place, we could also have a place like a Jamaican bakery. It's kind of insane that there's not a Jamaican bakery in downtown Hartford. There was, and now, and, you know, and I mean, that's kind of insane. And it's kind of insane that there's not, say, a place to buy Puerto Rican food in downtown Hartford.
In downtown Hartford.
And you think about the populations we have in Hartford, and it's literally insane that those things don't exist.
I know, Margaret, you want to jump in quickly as we're running low on time. Go ahead.
Property owners and developers slowly trying to change their minds and getting them invested as partners in these projects will mean a greater success of everybody being able to afford to come together, open a business. So, you know, I really like to see in the next 6 months more property owners and developers get into our camp here. And, you know, once you start opening storefronts and ground floor, all kinds of conversations can happen. And I think that's one of the greatest things about these programs.
Tony, I know you wanted to jump in quickly. We just have maybe 2 minutes left, but I wanted to get your thoughts on some of this. They have affordable housing, of course, and also, you know, getting property owners really interested in some of these ideas that would create a place that people feel really good about.
Well, in the end, you have to make the market work, and you can't will that into being. What you can do is the two pieces that we've talked about here today is sort of the cultural and the programming and the human and side of things, but you must at the same time do the physical and the infrastructure and the design, the hard and the soft. They have to go together. It's very hard to make your storefronts less than ephemeral if you don't have the physical space that supports them and accommodates them.
We've been talking with Tony Gold, president of Urban Edge Associates, Jamil Ragland, who is working at Trinity College. She's a resident of Hartford, and Lourdes Correa Carlo, who's an artist exhibiting at Real Artways. Her exhibit is called Systemic Relation, and they are going to be part of a conversation that's happening this upcoming Saturday, the 14th at 1 p.m. at Real Artways. It's called How Do Our Surroundings Shape Us? I want to thank you all very much for being here. I really appreciate it. I also want to thank Margaret Bodell, who's CVO of Create Here Now. This is a statewide space reuse program. Thank you so much, Margaret, for everything that you're doing and for talking with us here on Where We Live.
Thank you so much. CreateHereNow.org for more information.
Excellent. And if you want to find out more information about any of this, you can go to WNPR.org. If you want to join us downtown on Trumbull Street, the Colin McEnroe Show will be here at 1 o'clock. Our program is produced by Tucker Ives with Katie Talarski. I'm John Dankowski, and this is Where We Live.